Welcome to the Think Christian podcast. Josh Larson here with another edition of the TC Movie Club that we're excited to share. Last year saw the welcome return of Japanese animator Hayao Miyazaki, the director of classics like My Neighbor Totoro, Princess Mononoke, and Spirited Away. Miyazaki came out of retirement in 2023 to offer the truly wonderful The Boy and the Heron. So the movie club got together to discuss his many beloved films and how they might speak particularly to Christians. Fuller Theological Seminary's Elijah Davidson, whose Icons of Cinema book series includes an installment on Miyazaki, joined me as co-host, helping to preside over another great movie club conversation. If you like what you hear and want to become a member of the TC Movie Club, that's easy. Just sign up at thinkchristian.net/movieclub. That's thinkchristian.net/movieclub. We'll return with a regular episode of the podcast in the next week or so. I think we're due to cover a new music release. But for now, here's our discussion on the work of Hayao Miyazaki. Hello there, I'm Josh Larson, senior producer at thinkchristian.net and host of the TC Movie Club. Happy to have you here at the winter 2024 session. We're going to finally take on the work of master Japanese animator Hayao Miyazaki. And I say finally because, as longtime members of the club know, those of you who have been around since the beginning, we have had Miyazaki as a poll option three times. Those who aren't part of the club and are listening to this, we usually vote on the topic. So put that open to all our members. And Miyazaki's been on there for a little bit. And I was thinking this last time, I'm not going to subject him to another defeat, another humiliating defeat in our poll. But then, you know, The Boy and the Heron proved to be just too amazing. I mean, that shouldn't have been a surprise to anyone, but I went for it so hard, and it even got a Best Animated Feature Oscar nomination. So I figured, why not try it once more? Let's just try it one more time, see what happens. And sure enough, it was close. It was close, but Miyazaki did squeak out a win over, I think, one of the other options for sure was a general discussion of this year's Oscars. And we did that last year, and that was a good discussion, so I kind of thought that would take it. But no, Miyazaki did pull it out, and I'm quite happy about that. So I'm also happy to be joined once again by our chat moderator and TC contributor, Zachary Lee. Zachary, welcome. Good to see you again. So please keep those comments coming in the chat. And also, we have the good company this time around of Elijah Davidson. Elijah is co-director of Fuller Seminary's Brem Film and also the author of Lifted, Hayao Miyazaki. That's part of his monograph series on great movie directors. Welcome, Elijah.
It's such a pleasure. Such a pleasure to be here. Thrilled to talk about Miyazaki, people who like Miyazaki as much as I do.
Yeah, Elijah and I go back quite a while. We've done various collaborative projects between TC and Brem. And so when I saw he wrote about Miyazaki, it was exciting to have this chance to bring him on. So Elijah, you know, the series I mentioned, Icons of Cinema, it also covers Christopher Nolan and Guillermo del Toro, formidable directors in their own right. I want to know, what was it about Miyazaki's work that made the cut, where you had to be selective and you thought, yep, I'm going to do an installment on Miyazaki?
I started with Nolan and del Toro just because they're very popular and I like their movies a lot. I did like a long study on del Toro on my own a few years ago. And so I was like, well, people will like these. I initially like imagined the series just as like a free download thing on my website. So I wanted to choose a couple of filmmakers that were kind of popular and always popular. And then after I did those two, I realized I had done two like contemporary science fiction fantasy masters, you know, like maybe two of the most successful ones. And so I thought, okay, well, I want to do a couple of more of these that are in the same genre. And I thought, well, there's no greater living filmmaker, and probably not anyone more influential in fantasy than Miyazaki. And I thought it'd be fun to do an animation thing too. So he made a lot of sense there. And I also knew it would be a challenge in a way that del Toro and Nolan weren't, because Miyazaki's just his his upbringing, his cultural context is just so different than my own. And at least with Nolan and Del Toro, you know, they do have like Christian backgrounds. And Miyazaki's was going to be totally different. So the idea of all that I would get to learn while doing it really appealed to me too.
Yeah. Can we follow that a little bit more? Because that's what I am really curious about. And you do, having read the book, you do touch on it and give some of that background. But I kind of want to hear more about it from you. I'm curious, you know, as you mentioned, considering his work from a Christian perspective, and you want to remember to be respectful of the Eastern spirituality, that's such an influence on it. So in your research, what did you learn about Miyazaki, the way Buddhist or Shinto beliefs are maybe an influence on his work? What did you learn that maybe surprised you or really informed the films when you went back and took a second look at them, having known that things you noticed, all that sort of stuff? That's what I'm really eager to hear about.
Yeah, maybe the simplest way to put it would be that Miyazaki is not, he doesn't seem to be an artist who is self-critical when he's in the process of making his films or writing his stories. Like he just does what he does. And that's, it's been especially true as he's like moved away from doing adaptations. Like earlier in his career, he did a lot of adaptations of European fantasy stories a lot of times. And then after Kiki, he really moved into kind of doing just kind of whatever he wanted. And he doesn't have a lot of religious, like explicit religious heritage himself. Like he wasn't raised in an explicitly religious home or it doesn't claim any certain kind of religiosity. He just kind of tells the story he wants to tell and just like lets it go and kind of follows the story where it goes to. And so all this stuff that he has just absorbed over his life or that's part of the culture, his own culture or the culture he's creating or depicting, just kind of comes up through it. And even sometimes there were moments where he would say, like at the end of like Nausicaa, the film, for instance, like, you know, Nausicaa, like, she dies and then she comes back to life. Even he says something like, he's like, yeah, we kind of did a Christian thing there. And he like kind of sounds like a little bit like rueful about it, but it was like the only way to end the story.
Interesting.
In a satisfying way in that moment. And so the only time he really really explicitly talks about religion anyway is in the interviews around Princess Mononoke. And he gets into, he's asked explicitly about that because, you know, that kind of, it's very up in your face in that movie, religiosity. And how he frames it, he says that Japanese people have this like kind of amalgam of religions that have been part of Japanese culture for a long time. And it's Buddhism and Hinduism and Shintoism and Christianity. But he doesn't feel like Japan really adheres to any of those entirely. And that rather he says, and he could be wrong, this is just his perspective on it. He says that they have a, Japanese people seem to have a deep connection to a kind of purity, a purity of nature, a purity of spirit. And that was what he wanted to kind of show in the film. That's what he kind of connected to religiously. And so that kind of comes out of the Shintoism a little bit. And like the Shintoism shows up in like how everything has life and all the life is equally important in his films. The life of every object and every blade of grass, everything matters equally. But it was that like pursuit of purity kind of thing. I think of like the image of like Nausicaa when she finally goes under the forest and she's in that pure place of water and columns and stuff.
Yeah.
That's kind of like a quintessential like purity image in his films. And that's kind of the core of any kind of religiosity that he would claim, I guess.
Yeah. No, that's helpful. That's good. I'm curious then, you know, moving on from that, what is your approach from a Christian perspective, especially knowing all that, having that in the back of your head, and then you want to think about a Miyazaki film through a Christian lens? So you want to respect those elements you're talking about, don't want to baptize them. You know, we think about that sort of term. And I see someone who I know has a good answer to this, who's joining us, Aaron Holmes, a professor at Biola, an animator himself. And I was out there at Biola in January to watch My Neighbor Totoro, actually, with Biola students. And so Aaron and I were talking about this very question. So I know Aaron has an opinion on this, and maybe we'll get to that in a bit. But for you, Elijah, when you're thinking about this, what's the path, the process, just the way you go about applying that Christian lens and thinking about a Miyazaki film?
With any filmmaker, really, but it was just extra hard with Miyazaki, or extra complicated with Miyazaki, because his perspective is so different than mine. But with any filmmaker, I really kind of seek to clearly understand what they have said or are saying, or the questions that they're asking, and like what their responses are to those questions. I try to really hear that. Like, I start by really trying to hear them. So I take that as like, yeah, just that they're asking a question or stating something to me. And then I just respond out of my own Christianity to that. And so it's not even a matter of like trying to baptize it, what they've said or whatever. It's just like, okay, like that, I hear what you're saying there. And I agree with this part of it, or I don't agree with this part, and here's why. This is what kind of we think as Christians and whatnot. So I kind of respond that way. So in the writing about the films, these are really simple things that I wrote. They're not very long. And then there's a prayer response at the end. And I formatted them that way because I wanted to be able to like give people like, here's what this film is. Here's where the heart of it is, and what kind of eternal questions the film is asking or responding to. And then kind of just like state that and place that there for the reader to kind of be able to attach to when they watch the film. Just kind of open the door for them. It's kind of how I think about it. And then I include the prayer there because I wanted to be able to respond out of my own faith to what I had seen. And so those prayers end up being more Christian, you know, more devotional than what the interactions are, because I trust the truth. I trust that the truth is true, and that will work on people, you know, one way or the other. And I don't have to apologize for it. I kind of place it there and let people interact with it and let God do what God wants to do with it in their lives. And then kind of model a response as well.
Yeah, I really appreciated that those prayerful endings teach your reflections. I thought that was a nice touch. And the way I think about what you're sort of describing is I often think about letting the movie speak first. I mean, I come in, you know, with my mouth closed, my ears open, my eyes open, obviously, and try to get a grasp of what the movie is saying first, and then maybe bringing whatever lens I have towards it. And I know, you know, one of the things that I thought about, and this did come up when Aaron and I were talking, is, you know, points of overlap or commonality that we might share. And one that's always struck me, probably since my first Miyazaki, which was Princess Mononoke, because it's such a strong theme there, is this idea of creation care, you know, love and respect for the natural world. But not only that, not just respect for the beauty, but this notion that we're called to steward it, that there's a real responsibility here on our part. I'm curious how you see maybe that theme playing out in Miyazaki's movies, Elijah.
Yeah, I really see it as that people are equal partners in creation in his films, which is a little bit different than the Christian understanding of that. Like, it's, I like in your video how you like quoted the cultural mandate passage, you know, and how like, you know, that sets us, like that establishes people as you said, stewards that are made separate, different than the rest of creation, and are kind of above creation in a way, and responsible for caretaking creation. And in Miyazaki, like his films, like it seems to be more true that people are equal with the rest of creation, that there's no special place given to people within creation. But then you have a similar responsibility, right? Because we do have agency, and we can push things one way or the other. Like, you think about, like, Miyazaki has spent the last like 20 years of his life spending every Saturday cleaning up a river that runs through his neighborhood, and with just his neighbors, they just go out and pick up traps to this river and try to clear it up. And like that I think like exemplifies his kind of understanding that we're all equal, and it is our responsibility to be good citizens or to be good neighbors with creation. So a little different, but it ends up like kind of a lot of times acting out in a lot of the same ways with how we care for everything that's all around us, this other life that God's put on the earth.
I like that you made the distinction. It makes me think, you know, one of the scenes I reference in that video essay is of Nauska flying on her glider next to the baby, and I'm going to forget the Om, thank you, yes, who that's flying. And, you know, initially there's a moment where she is above the Om, and it does echo this, like, where humans are placed in the biblical narrative. But as you were talking and I'm recalling that scene, I'm realizing there's more of a Miyazaki element in the way you describe, because she then kind of floats below the Om and then above it. And it's this more harmonious relationship is what's being visually depicted there, that's maybe representing that distinction that you're making.
In Ponyo too, right? Like in Ponyo, you have like a nature force that wants to just take over everything and wipe everything out. And what peace or shalom, as you say, in that film looks like is a more holistic relationship. Like it puts a loving relationship between a creature of the sea, Ponyo, and the boy, like as kind of the center of what that is. So not even one over the other ever together.
All right. One last question, a simpler one. Maybe not an easier one, though. I'm going to force you to choose a favorite Miyazaki, because this is our poll question, which I'll launch here so that everyone can jump in on this. Do you have a clear favorite, Elijah? Is this a simple question for you, or is this one you find yourself wrestling over? The options that I chose, there will be other, in case people feel strongly about something other than these, but The Boy and the Heron, My Neighbor Totoro, Ponyo, Princess Mononoke, and Spirited Away. Is it one of those for you, or would you go other?
I can answer this question really simply, or I can give you a really complicated answer. So the real
your
simple
choice.
The simple answer is it's Totoro for me. That's the simple answer. Totoro is just sublime. And all his movies are masterpieces, but Totoro is just sublime. And I have a more like as a middle-aged male, I have a very personal connection to Porco Rosso and really adore that film. I think that this is my more complicated answer. I think that Mononoke is like the most like astoundingly magnificent of his films.
Yeah.
In just its scope and everything, it's just incredible. And I would have previously said that Spirited Away was the one where I feel like he was most in touch with whatever his artistic drive is, that he just kind of like let that story go and followed it where he went, which is I think he kind of seeks to do, is to like let the story take him where it will go. But now The Boy and the Heron's out there too, and I feel really strongly the same way about that one. It's like just as weird.
Yeah,
just as kind of goes everywhere. Like you feel like it's going places he's not anticipating it will go as you watch it. So
definitely.
So the simple answer is Totoro.
Okay. Well, and I'll just confirm it's also the right answer. So we'll see. all right. Well, thank you for all that, Elijah. Let's open it up now, and we can touch on, you know, some of these things we talked about, the creation care idea. I think I see a couple notes about that in the chat. Other ways that Miyazaki's movies resonate with us as Christians, or if you just want to lobby for your favorite Miyazaki in the poll before people decide to vote here, feel free to do that. But yeah, just click raise hand if you want to jump in here, and we'll get a little lineup going and have some good discussion. Does anyone want to get us started? If not, I'm gonna put Aaron Holmes on the spot. Go for it, Aaron. What would you add to what we've been talking about already? Because I know you have thoughts.
Yeah. I mean, I think what I've been thinking about recently with Miyazaki, as I've been talking with a lot of people here on campus about Miyazaki, like if we jump into the creation care thing. I go back to Princess Mononoke because it's the first one that I saw. And to me, it's one of the ones that's like most directly addressing the idea of man's relationship with nature. And I think what strikes me about it is I think it's maybe a a version of what you were talking about, Elijah, but just it's sort of like man's position as clearly part of nature, like on some sort of flattened level, sort of the thing that I go back to in Genesis, where the word used to refer to people as creatures, like other creatures. And it just, there is sort of a flattening in that Genesis account, but also it's like man's unique ability to unbalance or disrupt things very quickly. Like there's a sense that there's a sense, obviously, like we know that ecosystems have changed and climates have changed and animals have gone extinct without people's help. But it seems like we're uniquely positioned to make things happen really rapidly. Mm-hmm. And also it doesn't feel like, it feels like it happens so rapidly that we're never achieving. It's like when those other things have happened in the past, they reach another balanced point. And it feels like particularly right now with humans, we're changing things so fast that we're never finding a new balance. And that I think is likely leading to less human thriving in particular. So that I feel is what Mononoke is pointing to all over the place. And it's pointing to it at sort of like the earliest point at which people started to have the technology and population levels to do it. Like it's basically about what happens when you start like really essentially really mining and really foresting hardcore, right? Mm-hmm. And I can imagine that on an island is not small, but a lot smaller than the country I'm familiar with. But I can imagine in Japan the deforestation in particular could have a pretty quick impact once people figured out how to turn that into weapons or buildings or whatever. And so, but at the same time, the thing that I love so much about Princess Mononoke is that Lady Eboshi, who runs Irontown and is running all of this stuff, is a humanist who's actively caring for prostitutes and lepers. Like mm-hmm. she's kind of the most Christian character in the whole thing in some sense. So mm-hmm. yeah, the complexity of that one, you know, it's easy to go back and say, you know, there's no villains in Miyazaki movies, which is a strong point. And I think that's largely true, but just like the way it specifically is carried out with her in Princess Mononoke is something that I love and turn back to for the complexity there. So yeah, that's what I've been thinking about.
That's where I was going to go as you were talking is that all sounds very right. Humanity is having this extra inertia, extra force on creation. And you know, how maybe we should resist that or make sure we don't misuse that. But then Irontown is this strange combination of abusing and deforestation, all those things, but also sustaining and protecting. Precisely as you said, those who could not protect themselves. And so, yeah, it's just, I'm trying to think of that. Again, here's where the Christian lens is helpful, but not helpful. Like it's not, Irontown is not this example of, well, here's the fall, right? This is what the fall looks like. And so I don't know. Any thoughts, Elijah, on you know, the Irontown conundrum in Mononoke and how it might relate to this question throughout Miyazaki as a whole?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I feel like there, when it comes to creation, ecological matters, there's a very strong kind of mournful element to most of Miyazaki's films, that he doesn't have a lot of answers for how things can get better. Like the apocalyptic strain kind of runs through most of his movies. It's really strong in Mononoke, but it's also in Totoro too. You know, Totoro is set in the Satoyamas. That's a region that kind of shows where agriculture started and where what was wild before ended. And so they're kind of in a border area in Totoro. He made Mononoke because he wanted to explore and imagine what Japan was like before all of that, before agriculture and manufacturing, all that kind of stuff came in. And he put it right at the end of it. And so I think there's a strong sense of like, this is lost and we can't get it back in a lot of his films. And I mean, maybe that's kind of a limitation of that kind of Shinto perspective on the world and what our role is in creation. Maybe that is a place where the Christian idea of stewardship and our role in creation, like, is a real helpful thing, because like you said, like we can affect great change, purposeful great change in a way that other creatures don't or can't. There's a like a bit of there's an indictment there on us for the way that we break things, but there's also hope there because we could make change. That's a place where I feel like maybe we have a little bit of answer for Miyazaki's hopelessness and some of those things, that kind of thread that runs through a lot of his films.
Mm-hmm.
He starts with place when he starts making a movie, like literally setting, and then builds everything out of setting and discovers the characters that are there as he begins to explore the place and draw the place that they're in, and then kind of lets them be who they are. And so as he explored that period in Japan, it's 1500s, I believe, he didn't want to make a movie about the people you usually see in that period. He didn't want to make a movie about samurais or emperors or anything like that. He wanted to make a movie about everybody else. And that's where he found like those ironworks and people like that, or lepers and outcasts and prostitutes and stuff, and made a movie about them. And Lady Eboshi came out of that. She was someone who was taking care of them. And what would that look like? And how would that work? And what would that do to the world around them as they're doing all that kind of stuff? So it kind of grows out of that. I have a feeling in a lot of his movies that he doesn't like what his characters do necessarily. But he lets them do what they do because they have a life of their own.
Yeah, which explains all the complications and conflicted feelings. Even as you're describing those fields that are being farmed in My Neighbor Totoro, now those, yes, are an example of humanity's impact, and perhaps those were pristine forests before that. But at the same time, I think about the visual presentation, and there's something idyllic about them in Totoro, that this is an act that has its own harmony, in a way, which is just interesting because, again, it's not black and white. Like, you know, interacting with the land in any way is bad. It's not what we're getting here. So
it's also when they think May has died, they think she drowned in one of the rice paddies.
Yes.
So like, it's also a
good point
too. So it's a little bit of both all the time with him. That's why they're great.
Yeah, both all the time. That's a good way to put it. Zachary, I see that some things have been coming by in the chat. Anything there that's worth bringing to the fore? While if any others want to chime in, go ahead and hit raise hand and we'll give you a shot. But anything in the chat for now, Zachary?
Yeah, I was actually just about to respond to a comment that Scott had made, because I think he was talking about the line between in Miyazaki's work about worshiping the created versus the creator, and how for a lot of people, right, there's this idea that, you know, Christians have dropped the ball on environmental stewardship, and it's justified by not wanting to worship creation too much. But maybe they swung that pendulum the opposite way a little bit. So I was like, oh, that's what you were saying, Elijah, and also you, Aaron. It was making me think about that. And then David just had a comment about the role of the complex and admirable just women and female characters in Miyazaki's films too, and just kind of like, I see what you're saying, David, too, of like, what if people grew up with these stories as much as they also grew up with other American mythology, you know, and other franchises and stuff like that. So two different angles, the environmental angle and also exploring the female characters in Miyazaki's films, I thought were great points in the chat. So
yeah, and I think, you know, to David's point, I love how the MCU, I know he referenced, I love how naturally the female characters exist in these worlds, whereas, and I'm not writing off the entire MCU, I think it's done some good things for female representation as well, but how so many people call out, which Avengers installment is it? Is it Endgame, where there's that all the female superheroes come in for one frame, right? And you know, you can respect and understand what they're trying to do there, but consider the more holistic way that representation is done throughout the movies of Miyazaki. So yeah, I think that's absolutely an important quality of his work. But yeah, Scott, can I invite you to chime in a little bit more about that comment in terms of the distinction between worshiping the creator and the created, the creator or the creation? Is there anything you might want to add on that?
I don't know. I'm almost more curious to hear what other people thought, because I don't know what I think.
Okay, fair enough.
But I'll just say that I think I think the Imago Dei idea, you know, is so important to me and so crucial to Christian thought, that I think there's this almost a fear of acting like God. And, you know, so it's almost like, oh, well, we can't take care of creation, because we don't want to take God's place. Like, let's just let nature take its course, and we'll just stay over here and do our thing, and nature will do its thing. But I think there is a distinct, cultural mandate is a better way of phrasing it than the way I phrased it. But you know, I think, what did I say? Dropped the environmental stewardship ball. But yeah, the cultural mandate is something that I think is a part of being made in the image of God. Like, he created it, and he's wanting us to help care for it and continue creating. You know, he wants us to plant and to sow and to reap. And so there's a certain amount of, I definitely feel Miyazaki's just disappointment and hopelessness, I guess, when I look around and, you know, see urban sprawl and see, just the devastation that we humans have done to the environment. And so I feel like he's responding to that innate thing within him, that Imago Dei within him, this is something that the image of God, or that God created, and as images of God, we should be caring for. But I'm just curious, I'm not as familiar with all of his works as I should be, and I intended to get to more of them before this talk, and I didn't. I'm curious to hear from other people if there's examples of kind of that Imago Dei stewardship in some of his films more than others, or just trying to get to know him a little bit better through you guys who know him better than I do.
Yeah, thank you. And the Imago Dei is, like, it's multifaceted, right? It has the qualities that we think of the image of God is that, especially in the arts, this is why humans are creative, because we have a creative creator. But it's also, the stewardship thing is exactly reflective of God's care. It goes back to the very trajectory of creation and looking and seeing what was created and saying it is good. You know, that we are capable of that sort of, those sort of works at a lower level. Also, you have me thinking now, and my mind is racing, are there Miyazaki characters who represent this Christian sense of the Imago Dei of stewarding more than others? I do think Nausicaa kind of jumps out to me at that. She's maybe one of the most hopeful. We've talked about Miyazaki's disappointment, and I think that's very true, but she strikes me as maybe one of the most hopeful. You're nodding, Elijah, and any others besides her who would fall into this category?
Nausicaa, and then Sin in Spirited Away.
Spirited Away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she ends up doing a lot of, in her limited role there in that bathhouse. She worked real hard to help cleanse the water spirit, for example, and then save her parents and everything else too. But you know, it, like, there's there, but Nausicaa really, I mean, that's the big one. The film is great. The film is great, and I highly recommend the manga that he wrote. So he wrote the manga over like a 10-year period of time. He made the film 2 years into writing the manga. And so the story continued far beyond what we see in the film. And it also chronicles, like, Miyazaki's changing, like, ideas and opinions about how people should be both ecologically minded, civically minded, all that stuff. And it's as more complicated than anything else he ever did. But Nausicaa even becomes, like, more of that kind of figure, that, like, caring for creation, trying to figure out how to do that in a world that is her future world that is so destroyed, how to get other people to be part of that. I mean, she's the big one.
Yeah, I think so. I'm sure more will pop into mind, you know, probably in the middle of the night tonight for me, but that's how these things tend to go. Anyone else want to jump in on any of these topics or something that hasn't come up yet? In the meantime, I can look at where the poll is at. And right now, it looks like Spirited Away is in the lead. Yeah, go ahead, Scott.
I guess part of my question, too, was just, does anybody think he goes too far in his films? Like, basically that fear that we have of going too far. Does he go too far? And is he worshiping with kind of the absence of a creator, you know, like, is he acknowledging, yeah, like, does that seem to be a problem in his approach, or does it feel more like I just don't know, with the lack of a Christian perspective, it can be easy to just kind of worship Mother Nature without acknowledging the creator.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it seems, I'm thinking of, like, again, Mononoke, where there are the forest gods, but they are almost, even the deer god seems to be above some of the other gods, but there isn't this hierarchical sense. And my understanding of, some of these other religions that are informing these narratives is very thin. So I think the more interesting question might be, is he going too far? Well, not in the sense of that this is his context, this is his understanding. These may be, although it sounds like, what Elijah said, he's not coming from a specifically religious perspective, but in some filmmakers' cases, this may be their beliefs. So I think the important question is, for us as Christian moviegoers, how do we respect those beliefs, understand them, and still engage with the work of art in a faithful way? That's a much bigger question. But I think it's kind of what you're getting at, Scott. And I default back to what I said at the beginning, is like letting that perspective be shared, let the movie speak first, and then taking that into account and not necessarily being in a rush to say, well, here's what's wrong about it, here's what's right about it. Let's make our theology charts and put the good things in the one category, the bad things in another. I think it's more about those points of commonality or overlap, because that way we are respecting the art. But that's just kind of the approach I take. Aaron, I see your hand is raised. I don't know if you want to jump in on this or something else, but go ahead.
Add something real quick, though, if you don't mind.
Yeah. Go ahead, Elijah.
Yeah, on the question of like the worshiping creation question, there's a deep reverence for creation in Miyazaki's films. That's definitely there. But I think that Shinto idea, it doesn't really worship in the same way we think of worship. Like there's like a parallel equality with like humanity and all these spirits. They kind of exist in our plane, but not in our plane. You don't worship the forest god. Like, that's not how it works. Like, they just are. And you should respect them in the same way that you should respect your child, or your dog or whatever else. Like, it's kind of an equality of respect for all life, and the life in all things. That's kind of how Shinto sees it. So it's not worship in the same way we think of worship.
That makes sense. Yeah. Thanks. Aaron, and then we'll jump to you, Jacob, after Aaron. But go ahead. What were you going to say?
I'll keep it quick, because I was going to say almost the exact same thing that Elijah just said, is that I don't, thinking about most of the Miyazaki ones, the ones that I'm most familiar with, I don't sense that I am being directed to worship in any direction. So I do feel like there is a pretty clear lack of a sense that there ought to be worshipfulness towards a higher being. But it doesn't feel like it is then worshipfulness directed towards nature exactly. And even though I do think he's a very humanist filmmaker, I don't get the sense of we ought to worship humanity or the human spirit either, because there's it feels almost that nearly any character in a Miyazaki film that is set up in a position of potential authority, great power, is ready to be made a fool or take a fall. Whether that's sort of like I'm forgetting the name of the villain in Castle in the Sky, who's trying to, like, he's already powerful, he's trying to take over this powerful thing, going to use it as a weapon, and it just sort of like all falls apart around him. Even almost extending, sadly, to the forest spirit, which is such a beautiful animated figure in its deer form and its night walker form. But That, I mean, to me is almost just this sense of the fragility of things. And again, sort of like mankind's ability to destabilize or unbalance things. If anything, it feels like there is this push towards something like balance or, I don't know if order is exactly the right word for it, but something like balance as being an ideal and then lack of balance or disorder as being something that puts people in bad situations. It's sort of my broad take on like the worshipfulness of it.
Yeah. And then the overlap for me there is like what we would, as I mentioned in the video essay, think of as shalom from a Christian perspective, in a sense, like this is what we are hoping for in the new heaven, new earth. But yeah, in terms of humanity, definitely you would, you know, say a low anthropology viewpoint is what Miyazaki has on people. Jacob, go ahead.
Yeah, the thought, Josh, as you were talking, occurred to me, the Think Christian slogan came to mind, just where we believe that nothing is secular because God and his spirit is so enveloping. You know, I think it's just so much more comprehensively enveloping than we're even aware of. And yeah, I was just thinking, like, as we were talking, that I think in some sense we're spared as Christians who do believe in this just all-powerful being. We're spared from the responsibility of parsing out, like, okay, at what point does he cross the line, you know, into something that I can't get behind? Because you know, I think we hold to core tenets of our faith and values and, you know, and tenets of the tradition. But those at the end of the day, like, they even fail to represent the magnitude of God and his spirit and how it touches aspects of nature. And that thought came to me. It's like, if, you know, Elijah mentioned, I trust the truth. I think if we believe that, then we're spared from having to parse out, like, okay, exactly when can I take my hands off of this and say, okay, I'm done agreeing with that, you know. And we're not spared from thinking critically, you know, or from the responsibility of thinking critically. But I think as we approach RE, we should, as Christians, have that mindset of, if there's something true here, regardless of who's saying it, I can trust that it's true, and I can trust that it's going to speak for itself and it's going to hold up.
Yeah.
And almost, you know, let's see what I respond to and what my spirit responds to, because I think that will be a telltale sign of how is God and his creative spirit using the art that I interact with, and maybe in surprising ways.
Yeah. Yeah. The way I often talk about that is, you know, we're not the called to be the cultural police. But at the same time, that doesn't mean throwing discernment out the window, right? And so, like, these are good questions Scott is raising, and ones we need to think deeply about. But that's different. Discernment is different than, you know, feeling like we have that rubber stamp in one hand, and it's just like, okay, this one we can fully unequivocally give. This one we can't give the stamp to. Is maybe one way of thinking about it. Gianluca, am I saying that right? Sorry if I'm not, but I believe you're next if you wanted to jump in.
Hey Josh. Yeah, it's Gianluca.
Gianluca, okay.
Yeah, thank you. One thing that I've really appreciated about Miyazaki is in our call is like Christian discipleship. I think it's really difficult to when looking at Miyazaki to have any sort of Gnostic thinking. He, in all of his movies, it feels like nature or creation is almost like another character within his films. It's a very embodied film. And so I feel like as we do theology, as we do discipleship or read our Bibles, a lot of Miyazaki reminds me of like Old Testament, like Hebraic texts, because they're constantly mentioning the land and talking about the land. There is a theology of the land. And so I feel like in this, you know, theological imagination that us as Christians have and should develop and grow in. I think Miyazaki really helps and teaches us to imagine this theological world, that it's not just purely mental or academic, but it's certainly an embodied reality that we step into and we walk into. And of course, he does that so beautifully. I think another Japanese theologian, I'm thinking of Mako Fujimori or Fujimoro. He says that everything that is good is true, but everything that is beautiful is good and true. And I think there's something to that when we look at the beauty that Miyazaki produces, that as Jacob said, no such thing as secular. So there's some truth in what he's saying, but there's also some goodness and beauty ultimately.
Yeah, go ahead, Elijah.
No, sorry. I really like that embodiedness of nature, like how it reminds me of something that was very clarifying for me when I was studying Miyazaki and trying to get in on him and understand what was going on. There is a moment in, I think it's in The Neverending Man, the documentary about him, one of the three documentaries about him, where it's like an aside, but he says, we make things very hard on ourselves because we animate everything. and he does. I mean, it was like, it was very key to me because it was like, oh yeah, that's why the films look different than all other animated films.
Yeah.
That's why they're so much more alive, because they animate everything. They animate, if a blade of grass is moving, they animated it. If the water is rippling, they animated it. Like, there's everything has life in it. And they're like, him and his animators are devoted to that idea, where everything is, has spirit and embodied life. Yeah, I love that.
Yeah, that was so revealing to me when you wrote about that aspect of his work, Elijah, because it clarified it. It was something I sort of knew, like my eyes knew, but my mind had not registered. And then as you described, I was like, that's it. That's exactly it. So we're...
Take forever to make.
Yeah, oh, they animate everything. I'm sure. So we're coming near to the end of our time, but we probably have time for one more comment or question. If anyone who hasn't chimed in yet would like to do that, there's also time to vote in the poll before we close that. And as a matter of fact, Zachary, I'm going to put you on the spot. Have you voted yet? Before I'm going to ask you for your vote, and then we're going to end the poll and see which Miyazaki movie took this tonight. But do you have a clear favorite?
Oh, it was, I purposely X'd out of the tab because I was like, maybe I don't need to actually vote right now. I can just wait till the end. So you have exposed me. So I feel very convicted and see. Maybe it is recency bias, but there is something about The Boy and the Heron that really does stand out a lot. And I think I'm thinking a lot about, well, I think like even our discussion and hearing the comments that have been made about creation and just like the very visual and visceral idea of like creating a new world. And I think I'd mentioned in the chat, like those bricks of malice and like, can you make something new? And I don't know, there's a lot. It's still one of those that I'm unpacking. I think I've only seen it once. I think it definitely warrants, like, I didn't think with Oscars coming up too, it's like warrants a rewatch. But I think that was just one of those movies where, like, I didn't get it after watching. I just, you know, not that I got them necessarily, the other past ones, but it's like, it's a gift that keeps on giving type of film. And I think that's just why right now it's one that I'm really grateful that I can keep kind of coming back to. So.
Yeah, it's incredibly dense and rewarding. And for what it's worth, you know, I had it really high in my Miyazaki ranking the first time I saw it. And then, the second time it went even higher. So, but it's not doing that great in the poll, actually. Zachary, you would have been, if you'd cast that vote, you would have been the only one voting for it, it looks like. So right now, a tie, Totoro and Spirited Away, which makes sense. I think Spirited Away is probably generally considered his best. So yeah.
You're fighting against a lot of nostalgia for Boy and the Heron to succeed here in this poll.
Yeah, that's a good point.
We'll see in 5 or 10 years, right?
Yep, exactly.
I'm just so grateful for that movie. I never thought I'd seen a Miyazaki movie. And I've seen it twice, and I like weep for the first like 15 minutes just because I'm just so happy that it exists, you know.
Yep. Yeah, you're in that imagination again. I get it. I totally get it. All right. Well, before we sign off here, what we have a habit of doing, and at this point, probably everyone has exchanged their Letterboxd handles in the chat in previous movie clubs. But if this is your first time and you haven't, go ahead and do that. And we'll try to track each other down, you know, after this, maybe later tonight or some other time, so we can connect there. Thank you very much, Zachary, for moderating the chat again. Thanks, Elijah. Encourage people to check out Lifted. Anything else you'd like to put in front of folks, Elijah, that you've worked on before or are in the midst of?
Oh, I'm always in the midst of something. I'm working on another entry, kind of like the Miyazaki book, on James Cameron right now. So that's been fun. He'll be my fourth science fiction fantasy filmmaker, who's very influential from the past 40 years or so. That
there you go.
Put those all together. But Lifted's fun, and you can get it for free on my website. Just sign up to my newsletter and pick it for free.
Very, very generous of you, and I'd recommend it.
Yeah, great. This has been so much fun. Like, I spent like a year and a half like working on that Miyazaki book, and I had like three people who liked Miyazaki as much as I did. So it's fun to talk to people who love Miyazaki, honestly.
Yeah, you found quite a few more here tonight. So yeah. So good. Thanks again for doing this. So next up for the movie club, I gotta say, I usually have some options to offer at the meeting, but I'm behind on this, so that means I'm open to suggestions. So either respond to one of the emails you got about this session with any ideas you have, or you can reach out to Think Christian on social. We're at Think Christian on Facebook and Twitter, and give us some ideas. This would be our summer session, so keep that in mind, you know, what movies are coming out this summer, and what filmmakers we might want to explore, or something new. Yeah, so let me know about that, and then I'll get maybe a poll out if we get a couple of good options again, and we can vote on what we want to do in the summer. But for now, thank you all for joining tonight. This was a lot of fun and instructive and informative for me. Hope it was for you. We'll see each other again in a couple of months. Take care. Good night.